Hello and welcome back to Highly Successful Couples, the show that helps couples grow together instead of growing apart. I'm your host, Nick Solacek, and fall is bringing change. Lots of changes. Talking with many of you about the difficult, painful changes that you're experiencing, the things that are dying off that maybe you weren't ready to let go of. And for some of us, positive changes, right? Career endings, that we hated our job, relationship endings, bad habits, addictions, things we want to quit, things we want to put aside. Thank God the fall brings change, because come January, everyone's talking about new year, new you. Might as well get started now. And I feel for those of you that are going through painful, difficult circumstances. I wish it was easier. I wish that the journey had less suffering. You know, it'd be easier to learn lessons and grow and be an awesome person. What you're going to listen to today is a group presentation. And I'm giving this talk. This is a recording of a talk I gave to a group of men in the Conscious Relationship Council. And in this talk, I'm speaking directly to guys. So just keep that in mind. I'm not talking to a group of women, although much of what I say here does apply to women and will be useful to women. There is one statement that I make, for example, saying most of you here are minimizers. So just keep this in mind today, that I'm talking to a group of men. And you'll be able to distill and take away certain insights and lessons from that, whether you're a man or a woman. Thanks for listening to this show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for leaving reviews. Thanks for sharing the episodes with other people who might benefit. I appreciate you guys. And thanks for your patience here in terms of, you know, the last month we haven't put out any episodes. I've been really thinking about what I want to do with this show going forward. Originally, you know, when I started this, it was, I want to put some good ideas out and maybe grow an audience and support my coaching business and give people some free support. And it's also been a vehicle of developing my self-expression and my sense that it's okay to be me. It's okay to feel the way that I feel. It's okay to see the world the way that I see it. And to bring more of that energy, more of that directness, more of that authenticity to these recordings. And I think anyone who's been speaking in the public space, you could call myself public facing. I post things online, but I'm not a celebrity. I hope I never become a celebrity. I don't think I'm that interesting. not that kind of person. But when you put things out into the world, there's certainly, you know, your own fear of being judged, fear of what people will think, and, you know, fear of being canceled, fear of getting negative attention, of pissing people off, and then having to deal with, you know, just bullshit and comments and projections and misinterpretations of what you say. And while I do not want to be the kind of person who is a shit disturber and someone who stirs the pot and is constantly seeking to antagonize and trigger other people, I don't want to be that person. I also want to bring, you know, my own flavor, my own directness, my own opinion. It's just one man's opinion. You know, I want to bring more of that. Instead of sometimes what I try to do is walk a tightrope to empathize with everybody or make sure no one's too pissed off with what I have to say. And I think that can be a bit boring, you know, from time to time. So in this conversation today, you're going to hear me speak directly to the guys. There will be some coarse language. There's maybe two or three F-bombs here in this 40-minute presentation. Try to keep it clean here, but moving forward, we might get a little bit more explicit. We'll see. Let me know what you think of the presentation. Let me know if it makes a difference, if it lands, if it resonates, Certainly share it, you know, if you feel like it can make a difference for others. All right. Here is the conversation on the developmental mountain, the main communication styles that we develop in childhood and how these things play a major role in our adult life. We're going to talk about the subtleties and nuances of that. We're going to talk a little bit about relationships being a vehicle for growth instead of something that's just supposed to make us happy in perpetuity. And there are a few other details here and insights that I think you will find useful. Okay, here it is. Gentlemen, many of you are aware of the fact that men and women communicate differently. We fight, we argue, we misunderstand each other. We have polarity. And what I want to share with you today is a little bit about minimizing and maximizing. This is, in a way, not new to any of you, because you do it, you know it, you've lived it, you've been one of these characters. You get this way with people in your life when you're stressed and upset, and primarily with romantic partners. You show up in a particular way. Earlier in this group conversation, we talked about attachment styles. That is related to this. It's part of the anxious avoidant dance. Over the past 2 weeks, we've talked about and explored and processed a little bit of our relationship with mom and dad, which also has a lot to do with where these patterns come from. I'm recording this conversation so that you can revisit this, or you can come back to this if you feel necessary. Where I want to start here is with this concept called the developmental mountain. And I think the best place to start is just really early on, as early as it gets. All of us pop out into this world. We're shot out of the cannon of our mother's womb, and hopefully everything there goes pretty okay, and everybody's all right, and we're born a happy, safe baby. Pretty overwhelming experience to be, you know, popped out into the world with lights and air and sensations and sights and sounds. And hopefully all of us, when we start our journey on this developmental mountain over time, we're guided along this path of development by two loving parents, or at least one loving parent, who can keep us safe on this yellow brick road. You know, the parents are burdened by a big responsibility of keeping this child safe. This child who's completely helpless and dependent, guiding it, protecting it, eventually instructing it, praising it, setting appropriate boundaries, helping it understand, you know, how the world works. And if the parents are successful at this to a very high degree, they are going to continue to nurture this child through adolescence, through teenage years, into adulthood, as someone who really has a sense of self-esteem, confidence, security, a deep relationship with themselves. But it doesn't always go that way. What can happen is that actually the lions and tigers and bears of the Yellow Brick Road Wizard of Oz story, these are not just things that our parents have to protect us from. Sometimes these characters are our parents. Sometimes the things that we're afraid of, that are dangerous and threatening and scary, are in charge of the household that we live in, which can create complicated dynamics for all of us. And when we get afraid, when we get scared of our caretakers, of specific family members, of neighbors or teachers or people in our community. Our parents are supposed to be there to guide us and protect us and take care of us. And sometimes they fail to do that, right? Because they're not paying attention, or they're preoccupied with their own trauma, or they just don't know how to do something. They don't realize something is important. Or maybe we don't tell them, right? Because we've got something going on with us. We find it very difficult to share that with them, so they can't protect us. And some parents, through their addiction, through their other coping mechanisms, simply do not have the state of mind or the awareness to realize that, something's up with us, or that we need protecting at all, that maybe we need protecting from them, right? So this happens a million different ways. There's all kinds of less than ideal parenting styles, styles that have no scientific merit, such as spanking a child. If any of you find a scientific paper that shows beating a child makes it smarter, I would love to see it. So far, no one has been able to produce that. My point is that there's things that go on in this pathway, and we all start it. There's no question about it. All of us start this. We're born, we start this developmental pathway. There's key messages we can get along the way, that it's okay to be alive, it's okay to be you, it's okay to have your own feelings. Eventually, it's okay to make your own choices, right? Hell, when you're a toddler, when you're an infant, and you're 2 years old, it's okay to explore, right? It's okay to crawl over there. It's okay to sit over there or be away from mom or dad for a second, obviously within reason and safety. There's all kinds of key messages that we need along the way. And eventually, if we get this to a high degree, we will more quickly become a person who is responsible to ourself and responsible to our community or society in some way, which means our creative and our generative faculties are working, right? We are an effective, confident, focused, alive, wonderful person. We like ourselves, and we have purpose, and we have meaning in our life, and we are up to something. Now, you don't have to perfectly take this road to be up to something in life or to be a good person. But many of us take side paths. We're forced to take side paths, which is a little bit what this whole attachment conversation is about. So when this yellow brick road that we're supposed to walk with our parents is not safe, it doesn't feel very good, right? We have helicopter parents who control us and smother us and don't allow us to dress the way we want or make our own choices or decide what we want to pack for lunch at school. Or they set rules about who we can date or whether we're allowed to kiss girls or, just every single thing around the sun that they could possibly make a directive or a restriction on. When that goes on, we might take a side path to say, hey, okay, I got to maybe get some distance from these folks, or I got to do something to protect myself. Or man, I need to like really stand up for myself. I need to say something. Or, ooh, when I speak up, things don't go well. I better keep all this shit to myself. So instead of walking this path of safety and security up the middle of this mountain, we adapt. So this is what this conversation is about. When we do not know whether we are going to get healthy, reliable connection, we adapt. And generally, these patterns, these family systems, these dynamics are chronic. They have chronic dynamics going on in them, such that we develop strategies to protect ourselves, to cope, to make things okay for us to the extent that we can. And we basically become one of two people. We pattern one of two expressions or styles of relating. And those are the minimizer and the maximizer. So we come out of this journey of our family system Some of us much earlier than 20, some of us much later than 20, right? If you're like me, you moved out when you were 23, 24, and you were, out of the house, out of the country, maybe come back for a few months. If you have a relationship with your parents, if they're alive, that's been a part of my journey. And I had to use a certain style of expression to cope with and deal with who my parents are and how they relate to me, essentially, right? And my theory is that all of you have done the same thing. So the minimizer is someone who learns that it's better to avoid attention. It is better to avoid conflict. When things get stressful, when I'm stressed, when I'm upset, when I'm in pain, I'm going to withhold my thoughts and feelings and behavior, constricting my energy. I'm going to withdraw, maybe get away from the person or the situation. I'm going to lean out. I might dissociate. I might sort of think things through in my own mind, be independent, not lean on other people for support. And I had to do this. I learned to do this because of what was going on in my childhood, what was going on in my life between the ages of 0 and 20. Stress, pain, and upset. That does not mean my leg is broken. I'm in acute, extreme pain. It might just mean that you have something going on. You have a responsibility. It might not be that your partner's being negative with you. It might be that you have a big presentation at work, that you're stressed about the credit card bills, that you're having your friends over for dinner and you want them to have a good time. Stress is not always, stress is sometimes excitement, like, okay, I'm excited, but I'm feeling anxious. I got all this stuff to do. And we can go into this mode of expression, constriction, internalizing, maybe avoiding other people, not thinking about other people, just focusing on ourselves. There are many, many ways that this happens. The opposite is the maximizer. This is the person who draws attention to issues. Instead of avoiding conflict, they want to talk about everything. They want to talk about solutions. They want to talk about all the nitty-gritty details. They ask a lot of questions. They ask questions of you. They ask questions of other people. They might have a tendency to cling or pursue, hold on tight, lean in instead of lean out. And when this person is dealing with stress in life, with their work, with their relationship, they're hurt, they're upset, this is their tendency. Expand the energy, let it out. Right? Tell you all about it. And these two people marry each other. These two people fall in love over and over again. So there's an opposites attract dynamic here, which we'll, continue to notice the opposites attract dynamic. And if you guys have questions about this, please write this down. If something I say doesn't make sense, please make a note. Sometimes I may not speak perfectly. Or I might mispronounce something. So if anything doesn't make sense, write it down. I'll come back to it. I'll clarify. Okay, these two styles, they come out of this experience of childhood. We all take this developmental mountain path. When things aren't secure, when things aren't feeling good on that yellow brick road, we take a side path, we take a side route. We find a new way to be. We adapt to the situation to try to keep ourselves safe. And that might be expanding or constricting, maximizing or minimizing. Children defend themselves against this experience of pain in these two ways. So crying, whining, clinging, drawing attention towards issues, or shutting down, getting small, detaching, and avoiding attention. When a child feels wounded by a parent, the child will respond by internalizing the wounding parent and becoming like that parent. So the difficult parent in your household, the wounding parent, the chaotic parent, the one who's difficult to relate to, breaks your balls, gives you a hard time. You know, when you feel hurt by that dynamic, one of the ways you can respond to that is by becoming like them. You just like internalize this pattern, you internalize this behavior, and you become like them. You may alternatively identify with the other parent and their ways of coping with the wounding parent. So for example, if your mother is a tyrant, she's a little general, she is the eye of Sauron in your house, watching, noticing, you can't fucking get away with anything. It's like she's got a metal detector on the front door for Playboys and cap guns and water balloons and drugs and anything you might bring in. She knows what's going on. And this fixation and this intensity and this domination, you know, the sort of energy she brings, your father might deal with that in a way that is sort of dismissive or in denial, or might just say, oh, she's crazy, you know, she you gotta pay attention to her, don't worry about her, she's nuts, she's out of her mind. And because of what's going on there in the home, you might identify with your dad's strategy in that example. Right. And the way that they have chosen, the way that they have learned to cope with this difficult character. So you got to keep this in mind, because this plays a key role in terms of how you show up in your relationships today. And part of the question is, am I being my mother here? Am I dealing with this conflict with my partner the way my father dealt with conflict with my mother? Important points of inquiry. Simultaneously, you may create your own response or reaction to the difficult parent or the wounding parent. Wounding parent is a term from psychology and the therapy world, which is just referencing the parent who was difficult or more difficult. And we can have two. We can have two of them. Generally, it's one character that can be more difficult to relate to and be around, but not always. So what this boils down to is that we've got two different kinds of parents, one who's over-involved and one who's under-involved. It is almost always the case, if you grew up with two caretakers in the household, some of us did not, some of us never met our biological parents, but we might've been raised by someone, we might've had caretakers. The over-involved and under-involved parents. The over-involved parent is intrusive, insensitive, controlling, invasive, invalidating. They are doing way too much. They're anxious, they're tightly held, they're maybe intense. And the under-involved parent, they're a little bit more avoidant, neglectful, maybe unavailable in some ways, right? They might be kicking around for dinner every day, but they're just sort of like withdrawn, maybe uninterested in you, uninterested in what's going on in the home. These are generalities, but if you look closely, you can usually see at least one parent, you know, inside of this dynamic. So what happens? The child defends itself from this kind of annoying, at a minimum, or very painful, excruciating experience. With the over-involved parent, if that was your wounding parent, if that was your most difficult parent, you were likely more of a minimizer. If your pain is more on the under-involved parent or potentially set of parents, right, you would typically become more of an anxious person, more of a maximizer, more of a needy, clingy person who ends up with a more avoidant partner. And it's a defense mechanism, right? It's not really secure relating. At the end of the day, what this comes down to is pain. So as a child, you were in pain because of the contact you received. Dominating, controlling, physically abusive, this invasive kind of energy, painful contact. I don't want to be related to like that. Jeez, relax, back off, leave me alone, you know? Or painful lack of contact.
I wish I had people to hang out with. I wonder if anybody, will notice that I'm here or that I'm hiding in the closet. Oh man, I wish, mom and dad were home for dinner. I wish somebody would see me or ask about me, be curious about me. Pain, right? But painful lack of contact. So everyone here needs to think about this, right? Did generally I have more of a kind of a painful contact with these people or one of them? Or did I have more of a painful lack of? Do I see both? Do I see actually, oh, I can see both. Is one of these more intense than the other? Because if one of these is your main pattern that you experience, one of them is more intense than the other, that's likely playing a massive role in your adult relationship today. Right? So the partner who complains, my man, he's like always working. He's like, he's never here for me. He doesn't take me out on dates. He never initiates sex anymore. I think he's in his office, jerking off all the time, or he's at strip clubs, or he's chatting with girls online. He doesn't talk to me about anything. That's the complaint of the maximizer. Painful lack of contact. This person isn't present with me. They're not committed. They don't know if they want to be with me. They're not sure about me. Where the minimizer's got something different going on, right? And they refer to their partner maybe as a ball and chain, the nag. God, gosh, shush. Always bitching and moaning, right? That guy pouring his sorrows at the bar top, experiencing a painful kind of contact. But what we see is the way our partner creates pain for us. We see that you are ruining my life. We don't see how actually this plugs directly into our own pattern that we married or partnered or fell in love with someone who plays a perfect fit, perfect puzzle piece for this, okay? So our childhood adaptations become our adult problems for all of us. And just to be really clear, essentially, as an adult, when you are stressed, when you are in pain, when you are upset, not just with your partner, but just in life generally, you're going to defend yourself against the experience of pain. And how do you do that? Well, you minimize or you maximize. And you learned how to do this as a child. These strategies worked for you relatively effectively, and they have worked for you maybe relatively effectively in other situations. Both of these people have superpowers, by the way. So they have amazing talents and gifts, but there's also something in this that can be deeply painful and deeply destructive and self-sabotaging to any healthy relationship that you want to have stand the test of time. So the minimizer, instead of detaching, shutting down, going for a drive, neglecting their partner, ignoring their messages, avoiding attention, avoiding talking about things. This little sad, scared turtle, which by the way, most of you are, I'm this guy. You need to practice a few specific things. One is learning how to open up. One is learning how to be more present. And I would argue that probably the most important thing here is actually about presence. It's actually about embodiment. It's actually having a steel spine and a soft belly, and that you are truly here in the moment, that your attention is so high quality. It is pristine because of your embodiment practice, your meditation practice. Your simplicity, that in some ways you live like a monk because you don't spend any time on social media. You don't binge YouTube. You have burned your television in the yard. That you're this sort of spiritual warrior, that you have this energy and this presence about you. Your attention is so high quality. It's just, they can't get enough of it. It's so relaxing, it's so calming, it's so soothing to their nervous system for you to be there. And most of us in modern day are just completely fucking fried, and we have barely any attention span at all. We have no focus, we have no staying power. We are completely distracted. So being more available to your partner, that's not necessarily time, but it's absolutely high quality energy, high quality attention when you are with them, that you're really there. Taking ownership of your own feelings. This is something that the minimizer is not very good at. They don't really know what they need. They don't really know what they're feeling. It's difficult to take ownership of that because, no one really ever was that curious about their feelings and was just trying to tell them what to do or tell them what to feel. And they don't have any practice sharing about that because they're used to keeping everything to themselves, just working on things in their own mind, processing things in their own way. So they actually don't have a practice of sharing and communicating with others. It's actually very uncomfortable sometimes. So sharing more about your experience. This is generally the direction that if you see yourself as a minimizer, you have an opportunity to lean in. If you don't, you will bottle up your feelings. You will learn to cope with your dissatisfaction in all kinds of destructive ways. And sometimes that bottle is going to burst and you are going to say some nasty shit to your partner. Maximize your growth opportunities. Instead of crying, pursuing, whining, clinging, oh man, how can I, just thinking about them all the time, how can I win them over? How can I get them to love me? What can I do? What can I do? Trying to attract their attention, trying to get them to hang out, trying to get them to love you. Instead of complaining, criticizing, getting negative, putting them down, the maximizer needs to learn how to self-soothe. Also be present, self-regulate, but really back off more. Because that energetic storm, that storm cloud here, this hail storm, is really overwhelming to the minimizer. And the more that we do these things, the more that one person maximizes, the more the other person minimizes. And the more this person minimizes, the more the other person maximizes. We drive each other deeper into our defensive positions, into this way that we learned how to protect ourselves. And both strategies drive each other absolutely fucking mental, right? So just looking at this, if you see yourself as a minimizer, this crying, whining, needy bullshit, you judge it, you hate it. It's just, this is where we get into these negative comments about the opposite sex or about our partner, about how they're crazy, they're so irrational, they're so emotional, right? But to the maximizer, the minimizer is like, what, like, I don't know anything about you. Like, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Like, what's going on here? Do you want to be in this relationship? Like, do you give a fuck? Like, do you care? It's like the energy that the avoidant man gets, the judgment that the avoidant man gets. Oh, you're so detached. You're just the, but we're missing this empathy piece around our history and our past and why we kind of became the way that we are, why we see the world the way that we see it, and why we think that our coping strategies and our defense strategies are actually the right way to do things, because we do think that way. We think that we're right, and we get into a power struggle. So if you're a maximizer, if you notice, hey man, yeah, I kind of get needy. I'm more the person in relationship that people are like, I'm sure it's like having a hard time getting them to commit to me. I'm more with like the avoidant types. There can be something here around really developing more of a sense of yourself, managing more of your own emotions, because this kind of person, developing more of a sense of self, they have that tendency that the anxious person has to be so oriented on the other. So oriented on the others around them that they kind of lose themselves, right? They're so over-focused on other people that their own self-care, their own relationship to self can suffer. You are almost always attracted. You have the hots. You want to bang someone that uses the strategies that are opposite to yours. Oh, honey, I love you, says the anxious person to the avoidant. the accountant with the artist, the one who pursues is with the one who withdraws, exaggerating and withholding. And the one who's clingy is with the one who de is detached. And we get this painful oscillation of the windshield wipers going back and forth, leaning in, leaning out. What you guys need to remember is that when you get into these kinds of power struggles, these moments, your partner doesn't make any sense to you. Why are you like this? What is wrong with you? You fucking psycho. Or whatever language you say privately in your own mind, or you let slip when you actually say it out loud. You guys are never really fighting about what you think you're fighting about. You are both on opposite sides of the developmental mountain. There is something from the past that is driving your reactivity now. If it's hysterical, it is historical. If you're really getting worked up, or your partner's really getting worked up, it's not just about the dishes. It's not just about you forgot to take out the fucking trash again. There's something deeper there that's driving the moment, and it becomes very confusing for people. So, the Yellow Brick Road, for those of you that remember The Wizard of Oz, the Cowardly Lion, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, these archetypes, these characters think that they're missing something. And most of the movie, they go around feeling like they are. The lion is lacking courage, the scarecrow has no brain, and the tin man has no heart. And throughout this story, as they're, going down the road there with Dorothy, each character begins acting out the very qualities that they believe that they lack. So through the experience of life, through the experience of traveling the Yellow Brick Road to Oz, they begin responding to the circumstances that life presents, and they unbeknownst to them, start behaving in courageous, in empathetic and heartfelt and clever ways. And the same is true for us. So the traits we think we might lack are already a part of us in some way. It's just that maybe they haven't been welcomed, they haven't been encouraged, they haven't been developed. Sometimes life gives us experiences to express ourselves in a certain way, gives us a chance to be courageous if we're willing to get off the couch and get out of the house. But sometimes we need to actively look within ourselves and reclaim parts of ourselves that have been lost along the way. And I've never met a person who didn't have parts of them that were lost along the way. Parts of them that were looked down on, were judged, shamed, ridiculed, humiliated, beaten out of them. There's things that are not nurtured. There's things that were not taught. There's things we're taught not to do. And this is really what I mean about parts of ourselves. And it just so happens that the way that I view relationships, the way that Imago relationships theory views relationships, and Ben is with me on this, is that basically we pick a partner to help us grow. Relationships are not meant to make us happy. They are meant to make us grow. And through growth, when we experience progress, we feel satisfied. We feel like we're getting somewhere. When you fall in love with someone, your unconscious mind recognizes the lost parts of you in the other. You pick a partner that can travel this road ahead with you and help you reclaim parts of yourself. The parts of you that didn't really learn how to act or think effectively. The parts of you that are just not really in touch with your feelings. You're not so sensitive. So you go and you look for a sensitive woman who's quick to cry. Right? When the dog gets hurt in the movie, or somebody gets sick. So, in this way, our partners are spiritual teacher. They can help us heal if we both take on this philosophy that we are together to grow, heal, become allies in our development. What most couples do is we fight and argue and lie and betray each other and do stupid things without mindfulness, without intention, because we are just an unconscious ball of energy. And we create very painful, negative, nightmarish situations with each other. And you have an opportunity to do something different. Now, I've been doing this for a while. I still make mistakes. I still get it wrong. I still hit speed bumps. This is not a 1 month or a 1 year process. This is a lifetime. This is a journey that you'll go on through life with one partner or many partners. Hopefully, you know, just with an enjoyable experience and with a philosophy of growth, with an attitude that we're going to need to work hard to do this and make this happen. The last point is that, you know, this unconscious agenda, this is the conscious agenda you've got for being in relationship is like, I want to fuck, I want to travel, I want to be in love, I want to hold hands, I want to cuddle, I want to plus one to all these weddings I get invited to every summer. I want to get my mom off my back. She's asking me when I'm going to get serious and settle down. You know, there's some conscious stuff maybe that we're aware of, but there's a bigger agenda. The primary motivation, primary adult motivation for being in adult relationship is to heal and finalize unfinished business from the past. We want our romantic partner to pick up where mom and dad left off. We want them to meet our needs in the way they were never met. We want them to give us what we needed and wanted the most as a child and didn't get. But we're not aware of that. So we have a very hard time communicating with them about it. And our partner does the same thing. They bring their unmet covert secret too, that I expect you to meet these needs, but I haven't told you anything about that. You don't know shit about my childhood. And then now we're going to fight with each other and we're going to create chaos. And we're just going to make this into the same kind of relationship that our parents had. We're just going to unconsciously recreate our childhood because that's what everybody does. Everybody does until they learn how to do it differently. So you need to know this, you need to hear this, but you also need to have an experience of actually moving through power struggle energy. You need to have an experience of having these moments, these shitty moments with your partner, to use that as an opportunity to get curious about what's really going on here. Am I minimizing? Am I doing my fucking minimizing shit and I'm responding to her maximizing? Or I'm doing my maximizer thing and she's minimizing, or whatever the setup is. We need to actually have the experience of moving through these moments, actually finding out that this is true, not just because I said it, but because you can see it and you can recognize it for yourself. Really, really matters. Okay. That is the end of my rant today.